It looks like I'm a little louder than you.
Okay, I can speak louder. If that's required out of me, I can do that.
It might be.
Yeah, I'll speak louder for you. Whatever. I'm hungry.
And this Ty hasn't eaten today.
There's a room that smells like syrup.
I tell him it's his fault. Have a balanced breakfast, you know?
Yeah. No, breakfast is for chumps. I don't do breakfast. I do lunch and dinners only.
Doesn't mean anyone's forcing you to eat cereal. You know, just...
Do you want me to host this or do you want me to... Do you want to lead us in?
We don't have a host.
Yeah.
Yeah. In case you don't know me, my name's Matt Dolph. I work at 98.5 The Sports Hub. I've never been on the air. Ty Anderson, however, has been on the air. You heard him while we're recording this, shortly after he finished Zolak and Bertrand, filling in for them. Did a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Some nice, I think Hardy makes it easier for everybody.
Hardy's great to work with. There's not many people that are like bad to work with, I feel. Like, you know who was great? My first time I ever hosted or co-hosted anything, I was with Joe Murray. And Joe was like just the easiest person to sort of like guide me into this world, if you will, because you just bounce ideas off him and he, you know, he'll be honest with you if he likes him or if he doesn't like him, and you go from there. We did that on a Black Friday, and that was great. But no, Hardy was awesome. I mean, he lost me on the golf talk because I don't follow golf. It's not really interesting to me. I've tried to watch golf. Every time I try, I fall asleep. It's just so peaceful. It's so nice. Like, you listen to it, and it's like, he's now putting on the green. Gorgeous day out here.
It's very tranquil, very serene.
There's like birds out there. And you get woken up by the guy screaming, mashed potato, or whatever, when they hit it, when they drive it. So, not a golf guy, but I enjoyed his thoughts on it. He had some great takes on it.
Big golf guy, Hardy. Big golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy watching the majors. I don't watch just any tournament. And I mean, I got into like actually going golfing in recent years. I'm obviously terrible. But it's, you know, it's a fun activity to, you know, get out there with your friends and, you know, whack some balls into the woods and whatever.
The amazing ball whacker guy.
that's pretty much what we are.
I did that for the first time, like, in at least, I would say, 14 or 15 years over the summer. And I was crushing it. I was just taking a slap shot approach to it. I was crushing it, but I was crushing it to the left. And there was like a go-kart, like, course. This was up in Toronto.
Are you lefty or righty?
I'm a lefty. So I was crushing it to the left.
Okay, so that's me, yeah, too. Yeah. Yeah, so we're slicing it.
So, but it was going up and over, like, the protective netting, and there were kids in the golf course. I'm like, I would hit it. It was me and my friend, and I'd be like, go, 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 like, because he's a righty, and be like, oh, he's not hitting it like that. But I would freak out and think, oh, I'm going to actually hit a child on the golf course, or on the go-kart course. It didn't happen to my knowledge. But leaving that parking lot out the left, there were a lot of golf balls in that parking lot.
Where you were refreshing the Boston Globe and Boston Herald to see child dies in golfing accident.
Yeah, which, especially because it happened in Toronto. So it would have been like an international incident. Like, I don't know what would have happened. You know, I've only seen the horror stories of like what happens in like North Korea when you like steal a poster.
God forbid they find out you're a Bruins writer. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, I'd be done. Especially after the jokes made about John Tavares. Yeah. So... Oh, yeah, man. That's why we're here, though, right? We're talking that.
Speaking of the Bruins, yeah, that's a very disappointing effort last night overall. Yeah. See, I didn't think they were as bad as people are making them out to be. I think...
They weren't that good, though.
They weren't great. I think it might have felt worse because the first line, again, was not good. And they're straight up losing the matchup to the John Tavares line. And I think everybody underestimated the impact not only Tavares, but Jake Muzzin on the back end, and just that combination was going to have against that line.
Yeah, it's actually funny. When we had Billy Jaffe on today, I wanted to ask him about that because he obviously covered the Islanders for quite a bit. You know, was Tavares ever this two-way center? And in my head, I thought no, but then I kind of thought back, okay, he was the Islanders' best player for a decade, basically. He went against their best, the best competition they had to offer. So, you know, I think it makes him similar to like a Steven Stamkos or a Sidney Crosby. Although Crosby, his defensive game is so underrated in my opinion. But but again, like those are comps for him. He's not Austin Matthews, line rush. I'm gonna beat the hell out of you up ice. You know, in a foot race. He is a balanced sort of top line center, and you're seeing that right now. They're going power on power, and I don't love that matchup for them. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I think you got to exploit the matchups here, especially with Nazem Kadri being suspended.
Yeah, I think Tavares has always been like, he'll give you an honest effort on defense. He's not going to be perfect. He's not going to win the Selke, but, you know, he tries. He forechecks, and he's forechecking the hell out of these guys in these first three games. I mean, he sort of disappeared in game two, but now that he has the advantage of being matched up who they want to match him up against, it's really not looking good. For the first time all series, I thought it really didn't look good for Bergeron out there, which I thought was surprising. But
yeah,
it continues to be a struggle for the wings, too, especially Pastrnak. And I think, like, they got the secondary scoring that they've needed for the past year. Last night, you know, Krejci scored, Coyle scored. But now you get that line losing their matchup, which I think is not ideal at all. And if they could neutralize that matchup, if they could not give up a goal, you know, maybe it would be better for them. But, you know, it feels
strange, right? It's that you need to have everything kind of clicking for you at the same time. And it seems with this team, it's either, okay, the first line's carrying them and they have nothing from the other nine forwards, or it's, okay, the power play is going to carry them, but 5-on-5 play is going to struggle. Now it's secondary scoring is going to carry them, but the top line's not scoring. They haven't had the full assortment of weapons rolling at the same time for what feels like quite a while now. Like, I thought they had a solid finish to their season, but there were times where I said, this line's not going the way it needs to, or, wow, this Bergeron line, they didn't have a great night. Like, it hasn't all come together yet, and it's actually starting to hurt them now, because you're talking about a Toronto team that is simply too talented and too capable for you to have these no-shows from some of your best players at the end of the day.
Yeah, I wrote about this on the website. I just think, especially on the power play goals, it just looked like they couldn't keep up. It just looked like they had too much skill and speed to beat them. You know, especially on the Austin Matthews goal, like Bergeron just gets absolutely mugged by Marner and Johnsson, and then Marner and Johnsson go tic-tac-toe with Austin Matthews, and everybody just looks a step behind. And
yeah, and you had two guys on their power play goal. You had two guys chasing the same skater.
Yeah.
It's just sloppy. You need to have some better structure here if you're going to win these games in Toronto. I mean, they're a good team. They're a good home team. They don't get a ton of power play opportunities, but they're effective with them. So you need to find a way to match them. And if you're not going to match them offensively, your defensive game has to be on point. And I don't think we've been able to say that in their losses. Games 1 and 3, their losses. Their defensive game has not been where it needs to be. Their decision-making in the defensive zone, not where it needs to be. They need to find ways to sort of lock it down and know the temperature of the game. Understand that, okay, we don't have our legs tonight. We don't have the jump tonight. How are we going to win? You're going to win defensively. You're not going to win going up the ice against this team. It's just you're not built that way. So you need to make sure you have a 5-man unit in your defensive end or a 4-man unit on the PK, and everyone knows their role. Everyone knows what they're doing. Right now, I don't think you have that from this team.
Yeah, the game one, they tried to play Toronto's game or like basically beat Toronto at their own game, and that really bit them in the ass. And you know, game two, they went back to sort of what works for them, and obviously it worked wonders. And this and Toronto, it's just going to be hard. Like, they can't really play their game. And, you know, like, if they try to play Toronto's game, they're just going to be chasing the whole time. So, I mean, I think the only answer really is it's obviously just be better. But, I mean, I think they have to start shuffling up the lines. They have to. I mean, he did that in the middle of the game last night with Pastrnak, right? Didn't he move him down?
He put him down with Heinen and Coyle for a few shifts. But I don't know if that was rewarding Pastrnak or simply saying, oh, my God, Backes looks like the Backes that was healthy scratched, you know, versus the guy you saw in game two, which maybe you should have expected to a degree, but yeah. I think that's been a problem, is that you go with that third line last night, two-thirds of it looked pretty good, and then Backes isn't giving you anything, and again, that speaks to sort of the overall team right now. It's just you don't know what you're getting. It's a mixed bag every night with this group.
I thought that line was maybe their best line, though, the third line. I mean, Coyle played well. Heinen was aggressive. Yeah, and I know Backes isn't giving you as much, but I mean, I thought that line was fine compared to what you were getting from the other groups.
No, they're fine. The problem, though, is that it needs to have all three guys rolling. If you have two out of the three, that's nice, but it's not enough in a road game. I think especially when you're talking about Toronto that's made some improvements, made some adjustments. This isn't the same Leafs team that, you know, is just a nightmare in their own end. You can make them that, but you got to put in the work, and I don't think Backes had the legs to be able to do that last night, and it hurt them. It hurt them, and the fourth line gave them nothing last night. They were killed territorially. They didn't give them any energy. Like, they were a liability, I would say, and this is where they really miss Sean Corrali right now, and it's, you wonder if and when he's going to be back in the lineup. Currently, he's projected to, the original timeline projected him to be back around this time, games 4 or 5, It's game four now, and he's still not back. I don't even know if he's practicing today. I know Johansson returned today. We're recording this on a what is today? Is it Tuesday? Time is an illusion.
I actually had to think about it. Yeah, today's Tuesday.
Yeah. So, I mean, does, you know, Thursday. Game four is Wednesday.
game four is tomorrow. Is that Celtics
game five now? You're looking at Corrali. I think you need him. You need him back. He's so important to this team, and he's so important in the matchup game against the Toronto Centers, especially now that they're basically rolling Tavares and Matthews. Like, these guys are playing a ton of minutes right now.
Yeah.
You need backup out there to help out in that department, and I think Corrali's the guy. So it's just the bottom six right now. It was great in game two, lacking in game three.
I mean, going back to what you said about two out of the three, I think you could make that point with all the top three lines, because, I mean, say what you want about Carson Coleman. I don't want to get on him too much because he's really not, like, you know, a top six NHL player, but he's not really pulling his weight like Krejci and DeBrusk are out there. And then you got David Pastrnak, who was, you could argue he was a negative last night, not just a zero, you know, because the way he was turning the puck over, how tentative he was. I think you pointed out in your story today that he had a chance to fire it on net with 5 seconds left in the game, and he passes it off to Krejci, and Krejci has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And, like, that's pretty much all she wrote. And that's what it felt like all night with him. Like, whenever he gets the puck, if he's not getting forechecked to hell and losing the puck, he's passing it off instead of trying to, you know, take a chance on his own. At the same time, him and Marchand both trying to get too fancy with the puck, which to me is still the big knock on Marchand offensively, is that he just tries to do too much sometimes when he really should just either use his speed or just fire away.
He's good.
I just think they're overthinking it because they're getting attacked ruthlessly and relentlessly by these Toronto wingers who use their speed on the forecheck as well as they do, you know, around the net when they're shooting it. So, I mean, I don't know what the solution is, but, I mean, they just have to be better than they've been.
No, they do. And I think the big problem there is, you know, you alluded to it there. It's they're trying to do too much right now. The whole line, I mean, when the Bergeron line is rolling, they're rolling because all three guys are pulling their weight.
And you're chasing them. That's what's going on exactly. When they're at their best.
And they did it in pockets in game two. And I said it to Felger, and he was a little surprised by it. I think the Muzzin-Zaitsev matchup is a good matchup for them because Muzzin and Zaitsev are slow. They can't move as well out there. That's where these moves you're talking about with Marchand and Pastrnak can come to play. But if not everyone's pulling their weight there, now you got Marchand, you know, phone boothing his way into the corner with no other option. Now you have Bergeron kind of hanging out high slot, waiting for a pass that's never going to come his way. And it goes the other way, and now you're trying to catch up. So they have a lot of issues right now that they need to work out structurally, I think, offensively, timing-wise. How much longer can you really give them to get together? I think that they've had 3 games now. The Bruins have won 1 game, but in these 3 games, have you really said that the Bergeron line has looked comfortable or good in any of these 3 games? I don't think so.
They've had little pockets where they've had, like, a good possession going, but besides Bergeron, really, like, I don't think Marchand or Pastrnak have been particularly consistent with generating quality chances anyway.
And they haven't.
Besides one goal that Marchand had.
And that's why I look at game four and I say, you give this group 3 or 4 shifts, and then you go, okay, this isn't working. Let's flip it around. Let's figure something out. Hell, I would even argue that you do it now, and you don't even wait for an in-game adjustment. You're beginning to see your season. It's fading. You're 2 losses away from being done for the summer. So
I would hope that they play game four like the season is on the line, because I don't think you're going to come back from 3-1. You saw how hard it is with Toronto last year. How hard that is to do. So.
Yeah, and I think game four is an absolute must win. I really do, because you just said it. You can't win 3 games in a row against the Leafs, I think, especially if one of those games in their building and you don't win the matchups like you didn't win last night. So, listen, I know a lot of this is panicky reaction after a loss, and
neither of us are saying the season's over. It's just,
yeah,
there's just things
well,
that
I'm
they
out
need
here
to
calling
turn
game
around.
Four a must win like a psychopath, but that's just
must win maybe a little strong, but I mean, you don't want them to be in a spot where they got to win 3 in a row. I mean, Toronto tried to do it twice the last 2 times they played them in the playoffs, and you know, they collapse at the very end in both game sevens. So,
and
I mean,
it also impacts your ability to, let's say Columbus sweeps the Lightning. Okay, now they're well rested and you have to play a seven game series. Like, and this is the same thing that happened last year, except with Tampa.
Yeah, but they're going to be rusty, dude.
No, they won't. They won't.
I'm telling you.
No. No, I refuse to believe this. No, I think that, listen, the Bruins have to win this series, obviously, but if they don't, it is such a missed opportunity. Their path to a title has never been clearer.
I know.
It is,
it's
right
just
now.
They gotta worry about themselves right now.
I understand.
They can't
that.
Really worry about what's going on across the way. And I'm not even ruling out that Tampa's just gonna steamroll them for four games.
Oh
now.
My god, they're not gonna. They're so.
They're like the big brother. It's like, all right, now I'm trying. That's what. You know.
No, they're done. I think the Lightning are done. Like they were done after game three. Or in the middle of game three, I should say. They quit.
Torts is an absolute legend.
He is.
What he's doing to that team right now.
Making him smoke a carton of cigarettes. Incredible. Yeah.
I think you were talking about it, I think, earlier. Maybe it was Tucker and Rich that it's might be the biggest choke in sports history. They were like they had one of the best regular seasons in the history of hockey.
Yeah.
And they might not win a single postseason game. That's just unbelievable.
There's nothing that compares to it, to quote Shane O'Connor. Nothing compares to it. It is absolutely nightmarish what they've lacked.
This is like if the 16-0 Patriots lost in the divisional to the Jaguars that year.
But they lost like 38-0. They just
exactly.
Didn't even do anything. They had negative offensive yardage, and Bill Belichick quit in the middle of the game. That's what that would be.
Maybe you could pull up one of Peyton Manning's classic one-and-dones to find like a bigger choke, but I don't know. This team was
Peyton Manning's.
They were literally being compared to the late 70s Canadians, late 80s Oilers by me and by others.
And mid-90s, and like, mid-90s Red Wings.
That's how good they were.
And here we are. Like, it's just that team, I think that this is the first time the Lightning have faced any sort of adversity all year, and they don't know how to handle it. This hasn't happened to us in over a calendar year. How can we fix this? How can we get better? And the simple fact is that the Blue Jackets are not letting them get better. The Blue Jackets are, anytime the Lightning turned the intensity, the Blue Jackets have matched it and then pushed it even further. Yeah. And I don't think the Lightning are capable of handling that at this point in their season. I think they've been too comfortable for too long. So I know we're getting way off topic talking about
I was just saying it like when I wrote a couple weeks ago that the Lightning haven't played a meaningful game all season. That's basically because they came out of the gate firing and you know they just ran away with it. Early,
yeah,
nobody ever came close to catching them. So,
and go back to
the finally have some adversity now.
Go back to the Bruins head to head they had with them in Boston when they lost, the Lightning lost rather. It was the second leg of a back to back, and they started Louis Domingue. So they could have said, "Oh, who the hell cares that we were supposed to lose that game? Scheduled loss, whatever you want to call it." They beat them. They beat the Bruins in Tampa at the end of March. That was a good win for them. But again, not as if that game meant anything. The division was wrapped up. Everyone was clinched. It was about proving yourself, proving your worth if you were the Bruins. Lightning had nothing to prove to the Bruins. What do they care? They have a 20-point lead. They're not worried about them. So, you know, I don't know. I just, this path seems wide open for the Bruins, and I would hate to look back on this and think what could have been if this coach, who has made a habit, he habitually changes his lines. Is not changing his lines. What are you waiting for? I know
you
respect the line, but what are you waiting for? You can't go down 3-1 and then change it up. Your hole is too deep. You have to do it now.
I think the fact that he switched it up in the middle of the game last night indicates that he's willing to, you know, start game four that way. I think he's, hopefully there's a shakeup coming. We'll find out at the next practice, I guess, but yeah, it's been a little frustrating, especially with the top line, and yeah, you know, wasn't really expecting them to have this much trouble. But I mean, I guess we just there was some graveyard whistling going on as far as the impact that the Tavares line was going to have. But
there's a few changes.
It's been frustrating.
There's a few changes today at practice, in case you want to know them.
Oh, really?
Carson. Well, the top two lines are remaining the exact same. Your third line is now Marcus Johansson on the left, Charlie Coyle at center, and Danton Heinen on the right. And your third defensive pairing at today's practice, Matt Grzelcyk and John Moore.
See, I like Moore. And I think you were saying this earlier today, too, that Moore, they might have signed Moore specifically for a team like Toronto because he could skate and he could, you know, push the pace up the ice. So maybe he's that much better than Steve Kampfer, who gave up the Tavares, you know, backhand pass that led to the third goal. So maybe, maybe they have a little bit of an upgrade in that department, but I think it's still going to come down to the forwards. Because
Kampfer, way too much ice time in the third period of last night's game. Every time I looked out there, he was out there, and I went, oh my God, what is this guy doing right now? Like, I get it. He's a veteran. He has offensive game, allegedly. He is a 30-year-old eighth defenseman. Like, that's what he is. There's nothing against that. He's made a living doing that. He's sort of fine
had to
at
go
that.
To him. They sort of had to go to him because they missed their sixth and seventh defenseman. So,
I know, but again, like, they were turning to him a little too much for my liking in the third period of game three.
You're saying he should have stayed on the bench more.
Yeah, that's where you got to shorten the rotation. It becomes a 5 or 4-man rotation. I wouldn't even put Carlo out there in the third period last night because you're looking for offense. You know that Carlo Stick is a black hole of offense. It's not coming from him. So that's where you shorten it and you go with, you know, your pairing, you're rolling out there. Every other shift is Krug and McAvoy together. They do this. They've done this. They were practicing for this in the beginning of the season.
Yep.
And then you put Grizzlick and Chara out there and you hope for the best. So they just, you know, these late game situation, late game management, I think could use a little bit of an improvement here. So maybe they get it in game four, and then they swing momentum back to Boston for a game five. You know, I remember in 2011, the Bruins entered game four against Montreal down 2-1. They tied the series, won game five in Boston in overtime, and off they went. So this is a big game, though. I mean, I'm stating the obvious, I know, but they really cannot lose this game. This is a must-win to me.
Yeah, you got to go back to Boston at 2-2. You really can't put, especially just with the way they've struggled and how tough the matchups have been, how surprisingly hard they've been in some cases. I don't think this is a team that you can look at now and say, like, well, they're clearly better. Like they have to play better in their own right, and they just have to be able to overcome the tough matchups that they're going to get if they get to a game six. Is that possible?
Yes.
Or is it necessary yet?
They got to win
game four to make game
this
six.
This microphone
necessary.
Smells like syrup. It's unbelievable. Like, I feel like I'm eating someone's breakfast right now. I don't know who used this last.
I don't want to implicate anybody, but Nick Jamelli is signed in on that computer over there.
Like,
nobody used it during the midday show.
Like, this is, you just made this great point, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, all I can smell is maple syrup right now. It's all I can smell right now.
Well, at least it's delicious.
I do not like pancakes. This is a bad time for me. I'm having a bad time, everybody.
Ty literally says he didn't have breakfast because he hates pancakes and waffles. That's his excuse for not having breakfast.
Morning. Well, I forgot that I bought new milk, so I woke up this morning thinking I didn't have any milk. So.
Cook an egg.
I don't want to do that. It sounds awful. I hate eggs. Eggs are bad.
You just hate breakfast food, then.
I do. I've been open about this. That's why I hate this microphone right now. I'm eating Nick Jamelli's breakfast right now, and I don't like it.
There's got to be something that's... Well, I guess, I don't know, breakfast is a social construct. You know, like,
yeah.
I feel like breakfast, the cereal is sort of a scam, you know?
Cereal is a Ponzi scheme.
The whole breakfast is the most important meal of the day thing is definitely a scam. That was I just wanted you to go buy some Rice Krispies and stuff. So
you can
eat whatever you want.
I found a family-sized box of banana cream frosted flakes, and I would love to try them, but I do not want a family-sized box in case they're awful.
Banana's one of those things where I love bananas, but I don't think I could eat anything else that tastes like a banana. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I couldn't have like a banana ice cream or banana pudding or anything
like
that.
You should get banana ice cream. It's real good.
I feel like liquid banana would just make me gag.
Maybe. I don't know.
We're devolving into food takes, but I like it.
No, I... So what you're saying, these wingers, they need to help. The forwards need to help out.
What a transition. Unbelievable.
I just wonder about what they're able to do. I mean, how much more can they really spin it? How much can they reinvent who they are right now? Their roster is what it is. And they have the optimal roster of this team will see a left shot winger on the right side. It has to. Whether that's Heinen or Johansson on line one or line two, it has to happen. Like,
yeah, they have no choice. Too many lefties.
Yeah, so what do they want to do? Who do they want to put there? And again, you said it. I don't want to rip Kuhlman. Kuhlman's been fine. He's filled in admirably for what they've asked him to do. But I'm not building a roster around what benefits Carson Kuhlman. If you have to move him down to the fourth line, you have to move him down to the fourth line. That's how it is.
Well, did you say that Johansson's in? So does that mean Kuhlman's going to be out?
No, right now, David Backus is the odd man out, which I'm okay with. But what if Sean Crowley comes back? What if that happens soon? Now you're talking...
What, bad Mike?
Yeah. But now you're talking, like, okay, now who's out? So they need to figure out... Because when Crowley comes, they're going to have to shuffle two lines around. So they really have to figure out what their top six is going to be. It can't be, okay, here's a rotation of 9 or 10 different players right now based on how the game is going. You have to have some idea of what you're going into this game with, I think, to some degree. So I want to know what they do. I want to know why they do the things they do as well. So we'll have to hear what Cassidy says.
I would love to see Pasternak with Krejci, but, I mean, I guess based on their practice lines, we're not going to see that.
Not yet, anyways. I
liked Heinen when he was up on that top line. I mean, if that's what it takes to get Pasternak going, put him with Krejci, who I think has been playing pretty well in the series. I mean, he played well last night. He had that big goal at the time.
I think Krejci and Coyle have been their best forwards in this series.
I think so, too.
I mean, it's not even
most consistent.
Yeah, sure. You know what you're getting with them. So, and I didn't love DeBrusk's game last night. I thought he was a little slow reaction-wise. Didn't
a little
have the
more
same,
tentative than game two.
Yeah, didn't have the same jump, the same speed. So I wonder if your idea of putting Pasternak down there, does that help Krejci have another option if DeBrusk is playing at less than 100%, which I'm convinced he is. He may have passed the test and everything, but he looked like a nightmare after game two.
But he took an absolute beating in game one.
Yeah, you know, they've hurt him, to say the least, in this series. So
you're hurting me.
Basically, so... I think that's something that you have to look at as well. So it's about, you know, finding ways to complement a player who's hot right now, but also try to spark a player who's struggling right now. And I think Pasternak with Krejci on that second line, DeBrusk on the left, that makes sense. That makes total sense for this team. It makes total sense for getting the series even heading back to Boston. And then if you go in game five and you say, okay, now maybe I want to try Bergeron back with, or Pasternak back with Bergeron and Marchand, you can do that because you're not as desperate as you were in game four. This game is all hands on deck. Every idea should be considered heading into this. So I don't know. I'm with you. I want them to break it up a little bit. I'd like Heinle on the first line. I think he's played well. I think his jump has been good. But now you're hurting Coyle because Coyle's played well. So not an easy thing for Cassidy, but this is where you're relying on him being the mad scientist that he was all year to find something to work out. Yeah.
Before we go, I have a quick prediction. It's going to be a lot of Rask talk from 2 to 6 today, I think.
Why is that?
I think they're gonna say this was a game where both teams were getting their chances, and it came down to which goalie made the big save and which one didn't. And Freddie Anderson made that huge save on David Krejci, and Tuukka Rask did not make a big save when he needed to.
I'm sorry.
The Trevor Moore goal, what an absolute dumpster fire. Oh, my God, please. I think we're going to hear that today.
I love that we blame the goaltender when the team is shooting 6% this postseason. Only the Lightning and Penguins have shot worse than the Bruins out of the gate. They've been horrible. I can't... You know, every time I say that Rask isn't a member of ISIS, I get accused of being a member of the Boohoo Tuukka crew.
Right, yeah.
But
I think they were both good last night.
I think
Frederick Anderson made just a couple more plays. That's all it is.
People think I'm crazy, but I think Anderson has been average. I don't think he's been tested.
He hasn't been average. He's been better than that. I think the first two games, first two games maybe a little overrated. He didn't have to make a bunch of tough saves. Last night I thought he was really good. I think he's been maybe the Leafs' most consistent player when you factor in how badly the Tavares line played in game two. I think Anderson's the one that's been there every night. And he hasn't screwed up that much, I don't think. I can't think of
not
a
at all.
That, that
well,
really
I mean, not
fault.
At all, but, well, there's
I mean,
the Heinen
goal.
But neither
goalie.
That's
I'm not saying
Nylander.
Rask is crapping himself out there, but...
No, but we're going to do this thing now. I know callers have done it, and I know Twitter has done it, and I'm sure the show is going to do it.
Twitter sucks.
Twitter is
it's not
the,
real
is,
life.
Is the worst. I have a funny story about that.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm sure it's hilarious.
It's
love
fun
it.
for me. But at the end of the day, like, we're going to pitch this as one goalie is standing on his head and the other one's not. When in reality, one goalie is not being challenged and the other goalie has been victimized by poor D-zone play. So I don't want to bill it as something it's not, because I think that Tuukka could be better. There's a few saves that he could make, yes. But at the end of the day, the Bruins are not making life difficult on Freddie Anderson. They need to be better in that area. So I don't want to blame it on Tuukka yet. I really don't. Because
no, you can't.
It's just there's so many other issues going on right now.
All three goals started with them giving the puck back to the Leafs in the defensive zone. You know, Torrey Crew gets beat by Tyler Ennis, by the way, who they just inserted into the lineup because Nazem Kadri got suspended.
Can't happen.
The second goal, I mean, I don't want to kill Bergeron too much just because he's, you know, a legend, but he got mugged by two guys.
Legend killer over here.
He got beat up by two guys at once, and they just moved the puck so fast that the puck was in the net in the blink of an eye.
Then
in the third goal, Carlo, I don't know how to call it half-assed, but it was, you know,
not a good clear.
A weak attempt at a clear that Tavares, you know, sort of chopped him down with his stick, and they had no problem keeping the puck in the zone, and that's got the whole sequence going.
And Carlo's had a few weak clears this postseason, and he's lucky that more haven't been in the back of the net. Carlo's a guy that this is his 2017. You know how everyone experienced 2017? Pastrnak experienced it. Corrali experienced it. This is his version of that. This is his first taste of it, and the difficulties that come with being a postseason player. Like, he's learning them right now, and so
I think I may have underestimated that whole aspect of it. Cassie mentioned the nerves after game one. I thought it was going to be a big boost to them to finally have this big defensive minded defenseman in their lineup after not having for 2 years, and
yeah,
it just really hasn't. Yeah, I guess Kevin Miller is that guy. Hopefully, I don't know what his timetable
is. He's not coming back for
a while.
Nope.
All right, so we got to depend on the parade of Cliftons and Vaakanainen, and maybe John Moore.
Yeah, I mean,
an interesting one.
Vaakanainen would be an interesting one, but here's the problem: he's only played two games in the last month. He had various injuries, and then he was dealing with a sickness.
Yeah, now complaining in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Exactly.
In a must-win game,
so,
maybe.
So his conditioning is not where they need to be. Lazan is hurt right now as well. So they're kind of screwed on that front. So unfortunately for them. My story about Twitter before we get out of here.
Oh, boy.
If you follow me on Twitter, you know that people hate me. But besides that, you know that I'm friends with Sarah Sivian, who writes for The Athletic for Carolina.
I think I know where this is going.
On Saturday, she had
a Twitter account. But Sarah Sivian,
oh, yeah,
by the way.
It's great.
Must follow if you're a hockey fan.
We used to work together, Sarah and I did. So she had a tweet about a Carolina player getting hurt. And she said, the Athletic trainer is out there. So I responded by saying, man, the Athletic is hiring everybody these days. You know, because, again, it's a dumb joke. That's what I do on the internet.
No, how dare you have a sense of humor.
I get a response from a person I don't know. No connection to Boston, no connection to Carolina, where Sarah is. His location is New York. And he goes, imagine being so pathetic and insecure that you got to attack a woman on the internet. You're pathetic. And I was like, I responded, instead of being like, hey, man, f*** you, you're an idiot. I went,
Dump that.
I went, hey, Sarah's actually my friend. So maybe you should realize that before you poop your pants at me.
Nope. Better take a nice big old dump than go yell at someone without knowing any of the context. That's Twitter.
Like, legitimately personally attacking me, like as a writer, as a human being, as like an adult, like just personal attacks galore from this guy within 5 seconds of seeing my tweet.
No, it's totally normal behavior.
And then I tell him, I'm like, hey man, we're actually friends. He goes, I apologize. You, dude. Like, the internet is killing all of us, and we need to stop it. Like,
yeah, social media, dude, is just going to be the end of the world.
Like, Twitter's, like, blown up on Ray Bork because he, like, bought, like, a thing of hamburger rolls from Stop and Shop.
Pissed me off.
And he's, like, had to release his big apology, being
like,
first
of all, go yell at the scabs.
Sorry.
Go yell at the scabs, first of all. And second of all, like, how do you know that he even knew what was going on with any of that?
Yeah.
Like, how do you know he has any clue what's going on with the strike and stuff? Like, the world doesn't stop moving just because you're on strike. It's not that I don't have sympathy for workers that have to go on strike.
Of course. I had friends that were in the market basket struggle. I understand it.
This is beyond that whole discussion. It's just that you don't have to attack anyone who crosses the picket line and then put them on blast on social media just to get fake internet points. Which is clearly this person's motivation.
And that was that person's motivation for attacking me, was that
They're like, oh, I can get some retweets and some likes by showing I'm an ally, man. I stand with you, man.
Oh, it's a famous person. I better attack him.
I hate
that. Maybe I'll get some likes.
I hate that, man. Like, it's so stupid. Like, what is the point of it? At the end of the day, like, you're still on the internet. It's not real. It's go outside. It's yeah. The internet is not real. And the Twitter, you know, the army of likes and retweets and, oh, I gotcha now. Like, it's going to kill all of us. And
people
I hate
tattling on each other via social media.
Yeah. You get people like snitch tagging people in tweets and things like that. Like, it's like, dude, like, what are you doing?
He's talking about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like you. So I'm going to say I don't like you. Whatever. Yeah, you tag him in it. I'm still not going to like them, and I'm not going to like you either. So that's what I got to say about the internet today. I'm sure I'll have something else after game 4 or game 5.
Yeah, f*** the internet. Speaking of the internet, we're going to put this online for you.
Please
listen
to it.
Once we get
it
all edited. I feel like Ty's microphone might have been a little lower than mine, so hopefully we have no issues. Or maybe it's just
yell.
My voice is just very loud and boisterous.
You can hear you coming down the hall.
I sure can. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to go take a listen to Felger Mass, see what they have to say about the Bruins, and I'm sure they'll be nice and reasonable and measured. And
I'm watching through the glass right now, and they both have their hands up. So I'm sure it's a very rational discussion happening right now.
Very reasonable discussions going on in the room next to us.
I'm very excited.
All right. Well, we'll see you later. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and let's hope that the Bruins can tie this series and we can keep having hockey to talk about.
See ya.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.